As promised, I did not go over the board with my decorations, but you have to add a little thing here and there, and our little Lego Batman have joined us. Unless you have really good eyesight, you probably don't even notice them. But if you've never actually sat down and seen the Lego Batman movie, I'd like to recommend it to you. Even if you don't like superheroes, let me tell you just generally what they did with that movie. They took all of the TV shows and all of the Batman movies and all the Batman TV shows and anything that he ever made an appearance in, and they did a spoof off of all of them, and they crammed it together in an 86-minute movie, and it's hilarious. They make fun of everything from the 1960 Batman with the pow, wham, zap, all the way to Superman v. Batman, all the way at the end with, I'm your kryptonite, Superman. And the thing is it's funny because we all have that question in the back of our mind. Is Batman really a superhero? I mean, it takes more than just a cool t-shirt, an outfit, and a scary voice to make a superhero, doesn't it? He doesn't really have any powers. I kind of have to question whether or not he has really good motives. He kind of struggles with relations and people. And even his methods of doing things, well, they sometimes aren't very heroic. And sometimes we just have to ask the question, is he really a superhero? Well, I don't know that he's a superhero, but I would definitely call him a comic book hero. Did you know that there's a formula for making a comic book hero? See, when you grow up a geek and a nerd and you like these kind of things, you know this kind of stuff. And there is a formula for making a comic book hero. And the first thing you have to have is you have to have a tragedy. Now, whether that's the death of Batman's parents or the blowing up of Superman's world or some kind of a personal failure like Iron Man or whether it's some kind of life-altering accident like the Incredible Hulk, you have to have tragedy in your hero's life to make this work. The next thing you have to have is your hero has to have some issues. I mean, who wants a perfect hero, right? I mean, I can't relate to perfect heroes. They've got to have something that's wrong with them. And if you begin to read through the comic books, you'll find out that whether or not they have really big egos or whether they're kind of brooding or whether they're really struggling with family issues, all of them seem to have these issues that they build the storylines behind. And then the other thing is at some point, every comic book superhero has to make a decision. I mean, they've got the powers and they've got the costume and they've got their story, but at some point, they have to decide, I am going to be a hero. You know, that's the only difference between a comic book hero and a comic book villain. It's this moment. It's the fact that I'm going to make the decision that I'm going to put on the cape. I'm going to put on the cap. No, I did not bring a cape. I still don't have any tights, and I'm not going to put on the mask. We're going to just stick with the shirt. By the way, my son has figured it out. He said, yeah, you stuck this sermon series in the middle of summer to give yourself an excuse to wear t-shirts to church. See? I know how to make this work. But every single hero has to make this decision. And unfortunately, the man that we are looking at for this particular study, he was never able to make this particular decision. You see, he had all of the powers that were there for a superhero, but you know what? He never put them used for what he was supposed to. He definitely lived in tragic times, did he not? Yeah, Israel was having a tough time. He definitely had character flaws. We began seeing some of that last week, and we'll dive deeper into that this week. But instead of making that one-time decision, I'm going to be the hero, instead of overcoming, we're going to begin to look at his life as it all starts to fall apart and he is overrun by everything that's going on. And this is Kids Sunday, and this is always kind of difficult because you want to have a sermon that's engaging, and you want to have a sermon that appeals to the kids, and you're trying to figure out how to put all the pieces together, and I'm going to try to go as quick as I can, and you know what? If the kids wander, the kids wander. It is what it is on Kids Sunday. It does not bother me one bit. And parents are kind of like, please don't make this a long sermon. So, but here's the deal. We're going to talk about something that whether or not you're 2 or 42 or 52 or 82, all of us deal with the same set of core issues that Samson dealt with. And we're going to talk about the decision-making process that Samson went through. And again, we can apply it to everybody, no matter who you are. You know, this is how you make decisions in your life. And if you have your copy of God's Word, make your way to Judges chapter 14. And we're going to start right there at the beginning. How does Samson begin with the decision that he's going to make? Well, I want it. I want it. This is what it says. Samson went down to Timnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me for my wife. Now, here's the funny thing. If you drop down to verse 7, we find out that when he went back in verse 7, then he went down and talked to the woman, and he liked her. So he comes home in verse 1, and he says, Mom, Dad, I found my wife of the future. I saw her, and man, is she gorgeous, and I want it. I want her. I want her to be my wife, and I'm sure that she's the right one for me. He hadn't even talked to her. Man, she might have had the most obnoxious voice in the universe. She doesn't know if she snores. She doesn't know what kind of food. All she knows is, I know what I saw. See, Samson saw and he began to desire. And well, you have to remember, we all see. We all see things out there, and when we all see, we want it. The question becomes is, where did you go from there? Once I see it, once I want it, once it's there, well, seeing becomes desire. It wasn't enough to say, sorry, he said, man, that's a good-looking girl. No, he began to say, I want it. This is what I want. And then desire becomes lust, and this is one of those big fancy church terms that we say lust, and here's all lust is. So everybody here can understand, lust is when I began to take my fantasy and I began trying to figure out how to make it my reality. I began to take the fantasy in the back of my head that I wanted, and I began to say, okay, how can I make it happen? So I began putting myself in the situation. I began putting myself there, and I go, and my desire becomes lust. And here's the deal. Samson didn't think this thing through, did he? I mean, Samson did not consider how his I want it would impact his mission. Remember who was the adversaries of the Israelites at this time? We talked about this last week. It was the Philistines. And where was this girl from? Philistines. Don't you think that's going to be a conflict of interest? Doesn't that going to cause some awkward moments around the family dinner? Well, what did you do today? Well, I went out and killed a couple hundred Philistines. Really? Were any of my relatives? I mean, he's not thinking it through. God's given him a mission, something that he's supposed to do. But now what I want is more important than what God's mission is. So I'm not going to think about that. Samson didn't care what other people thought. In particular, he didn't care what his parents thought, because he came home and said, Mom and Dad, I met the Philistine girl of my dreams. And before he even talks to her, this is what Dad says. His father and mother, so Mom is there too, reply, Isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistine and get a wife? But Samson said to his father, Get her for me. She's the right one for me. So Mom and Dad are looking and say, son, are you sure? I mean, all you did was see her across the room and you're ready to propose marriage at this point? I mean, don't you want to shop a little bit helping in Israel? I mean, I'm sure we can find a nice, pretty woman up here. You don't have to do that because this is going to... But he doesn't want to hear it. He doesn't want to listen to what other people in his life are saying. In fact, he goes so far, you know what? He doesn't care. He doesn't think it through because he doesn't consider his mission. He doesn't consider what other people are thinking. You know what else he doesn't consider? He doesn't care about God's word either. See, because if he did, you don't have to go very far. You could go just back in the book of Moses, one of those things that every little Israelite boy had to memorize, this particular little fact here. Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 3 and 4. Do not intermarry with them being the other cultures around. Do not give your daughters and do not give your daughters to their sons or take their daughters for your sons, for they will turn your children away from following me and serve other gods. Wait a minute, isn't that the issue we're dealing with Samson? Isn't that the whole problem in Israel? Isn't that the reason God put Samson here, is because Israelite is out worshiping other gods? And now here is Samson saying, I want the Philistine woman. And it says, he's right for me. And the verse here says, it will quickly destroy you. But Samson doesn't care about any of this. And doesn't this work in our life? I mean, whether it's the toy that you see in the toy store, or the job, or the shiny new truck, or the house on the hill, whether it's a mate, we begin to see and we begin to want, and we stop considering what God wants us to do, what God has given us to do, what others around us are saying, even what God said. Why? Because I want it. I want it. I want, I want, I want, I want. And I tell myself I want just enough, and I move on to the next phase in my decision making, because it isn't just enough to want, because if I go out and I spend the money on it or I do this, then I feel bad about it. So I have to convince myself I deserve it. I don't just want what I see, I deserve what I'm looking at. Sometime later, when he being Samson, went back to marry her, we'll talk about that in a second, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass. Now you're saying, wait a minute, we went from the pretty female to a dead lion carcass, so how did we get here? Well, on his way back and forth, this was a long distance relationship, and so he had to go and visit this woman that he's going to marry, because he had to get to know her at some point in his life. So he's going down there and he's getting to know her a little bit. So on one of his trips down there, a lion comes and attacks him, and God comes into Samson and gives him this magnificent strength, and it says he literally tore the lion in half like a loincloth. Just ripped, shed a hot cart. Talk about the problem that creates in just a moment. Because what's the problem? Well, Samson's a Nazirite. Now remember, there were only three qualifications to be a Nazirite, right? You couldn't drink wine. You were not supposed to cut your hair, and you were not supposed to come in contact with dead things. Well, if you kill something, then technically you're in contact. But did you know God built in a stipulation for that? If you were a Nazirite and somehow along the way you had to kill something, or you were standing in the crowd and somebody next to you just dropped dead, God said, I got a solution for that. Here's what it says in Numbers chapter 6, verses 9 through 11. If someone dies suddenly in a Nazirite's presence, thus defiling his hair that symbolizes their dedication, they must shave their head on the seventh day and on the day of their cleansing. Then on the eighth day, they must bring two doves and two young pigeons to the priest, to the priest's entrance, to the tent of meeting. Then the priest is to offer one as a sin offering and the other as a burnt offering to make atonement for the Nazirite because they sin by being in the presence of the dead body. That same day, they are to consecrate their head again, thus letting their hair grow. So you understand how this would change Samson, right? That would have changed the whole image. Every time Samson was forced to kill for God, he would have to go and offer a sin offering and shave his head. Every time Samson had to do anything that caused him to violate this particular thing, because you really sometimes can't control when you come in contact with something that's dead. But he was supposed to go and tell somebody what was going on and again, rededicate himself. What an image that would have painted for Israel, wouldn't it? If every time he sinned, he had to make a public display of getting his head shaved, and then make a sin offering so that he could start his commitment once again. That's the picture God was after. But the problem is, you know who Samson told he killed this lion? Nobody. He did it, and he's like, oh, well, I don't want to shave my head. I'm not going to go tell my parents. But then it gets a little more disgusting. Sometime later, when he went back to Mary, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass, and he saw in it a swarm of bees and some honey. He scooped out the honey with his hands and ate it as he went along. When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some, and they too ate it. My parents are here today. If I did this to you, how mad would you be at me? I think so. And they ate it too, but he did not. Yeah, I know why he did not. He did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the lion's carcass. Yeah, that's probably a good move, Samson. But I do want you to see, as he's doing this, it says he turned aside. So the carcass isn't laying on the road and he just happened upon it. No, he's going back and he turns aside. He gets off the beaten path and he goes and finds where he stored the dead body of the lion because he wants to take a look at his victory as he's standing there. And, well, when he arrives, the good news is the lion is still there. And the Bible calls it a carcass, and this is an important word, because that means there was still bone and flesh on it. So we're not talking about dry bones with some honeycomb hanging. We're talking about a dead body, okay? It's still flesh. It's a carcass. It isn't just bones. And, well, the bees have built a nest and are making honey. Now, okay, I like honey. I do. But Samson decides to eat. And I like meat, I do. And I like honey, but I have to wonder, what was he thinking? And it probably went something like this. I like honey. If it were not for me, and that I killed this lion and put it here, then these bees would have no place to make this honey. Thus, the honey the bees are making is rightfully mine. Isn't that sound logic? Now, that might have been what he was thinking, but what I'm really interested about is, what did he forget? And the first thing that Samson forgot is, that's disgusting. I mean, isn't it amazing how when you decide to do something that you know God doesn't want you to do, how many excuses you can make to make it right? How many times you can look at your sin and you can say, it's okay because I deserve it, no matter how dirty it is, no matter how far it drags you down, no matter how many barriers it puts between you and God, you begin to look at it, and because I deserve it, it's okay, and we forget that, you know what? It's disgusting. It disgusts God in the way that we sometimes do this. And he forgot all about that, but you know the second thing he forgot? He didn't kill the lion. I mean, okay, let's see if our boys and girls remember, how do you survive a lion attack? This is from the last kid's sermon when you were up here. How do you survive? You don't. If you're on your own and a lion attacks, you're dinner. You don't win. Remember who killed that lion? It was God's spirit that came into him, that gave him the strength, that allowed him to rip. So it wasn't his kill. It was God's. And so since it was God's kill, then guess whose honey it was? It was God's honey. And then you know what? He forgot all about that itty-bitty, teeny-tiny commitment from his long hair. Amazing how he can forget about this. I mean, the man's got a head full of hair that's down, and it's there all the time, and he's always having to brush. It's amazing how quickly he forgets the fact that, you know what? Through the period of their dedication to the Lord, the Nazarite must not go near a dead body. This isn't an accident. He just didn't happen upon something that got shot. He's taking a tour to go look. And when he gets there, I deserve it. Yeah. Man, that honey is sweet and it's good. And you know, and I deserve to have it. After all, I'm the only one here. And if I don't take it, who's going to eat it? And here's the other cool thing. Nobody will ever know. Come on, how many times have we told ourselves that? Nobody will ever know that I did this. I mean, I can go and look. I mean, even look. I wanted, you know, when I was a youth minister, we had this van that we were on a trip one time, and there was a mom sitting up in the front seat with me. And first thing you know, a bag of peanuts got passed up from the back of the van, and it came to mom, and it was from her daughters. And mom said, "Oh, well, thank you." And she starts eating the peanuts, and you could hear the girl snickering in the back, just kind of laughing. And she's like, "All right, what did you do to the peanuts?" I'm like, "Nothing, except for they used to be M&Ms." Think about this concept for a second. But they gave it, and he did it. That's better than eating honey out of a lion's carcass, folks. But Samson felt so deserving that he then boastfully gave it to his parents as well. Wow. When I think I deserve things, it really starts to cause a problem with my decision-making process, doesn't it? If I can convince myself I deserve it, and anything goes, right? Doesn't matter what people tell me. Doesn't matter what God said. I deserve it. And then he made the most unworthy decision that ever be made. He went from I want it to I deserve it to he told himself, I can handle it. Now his father went down to see the woman. So now his father's back. We're back on the marriage story. And Samson... And there Samson held a feast as was customary for young men. So I do want you to get, it's still all about his desire. It's all about what happened at the beginning. If he had not acted out on his lust, he would not be in this situation. If he had not done that, there would be no reason for him to be here whatsoever. He'd be home in Israel doing what he's supposed to do. There would be no lion, thus there would be no honey, thus there would be now no feast. And this word feast, well, this isn't like a meal. We translate it and we think about everybody sitting down around a thing. I mean, they break out the turkey and they break out the dressing and the mashed potatoes, and we think feast that way. That's not exactly what this word is. This word is actually the word for party. Okay? There was a tradition in Jewish culture that when a young man got married, he threw a party and invited all of his buddies. And that we have a term for this in our culture. We call it a bachelor party. That's what he's doing. And much like our culture, believe it or not, in their culture, it all centered around one thing: alcohol. Now, what's wrong with that? Well, this is not, well, he's not supposed to drink. He's not even supposed to eat a grape or a raisin, let alone have a party around a bottle of wine. That's the commitment that was made. That's what that hair meant. And, well, as he begins the party, the drinking leads to bad influences. He's hanging around with a bunch of buddies, and when you get drunk, then you know what begins to happen? The bad influences lead to making a bet. And so they make a bet, a riddle. He comes up with this ridiculous riddle, and if they can figure out the riddle, he has to give them all of this stuff. If they can't figure it out, then he gets all this stuff from them. And they make the bet, and well, the betting led to being manipulated, because then the girl that he was going to marry, well, she's friends with his buddies, and so they convince her to find out the answer to the riddle so that she can tell them so they can answer the riddle and win the bet that's winning the stuff. So he gets manipulated by the very girl he's about to marry. And well, the manipulation leads to debt because he tells her the answer. And she tells her friends, and then her friends answer the question. So now he owes a bunch of money, and so now he's in debt. And well, he's got to pay the debt. He doesn't really have a job, so the debt leads to murder and theft. He goes down and kills a bunch of Philistines and takes the possessions so that he can pay off his debt. And then the murder and theft leads to he lost his wife. Isn't that funny? The very reason that he was here, because he started down this path, he ended up losing the whole thing he wanted to start with. But he convinced himself, God, you just sit back and watch my life for a ride. I got this. I can handle what I'm getting myself into. Yeah, I know what your word said, but not me. It's not going to happen. God, parents, people, I can handle it. But you know what he didn't realize? Samson thought he could handle his sin until it was too late and he understood his sin had a hold on him. Samson thought he had it all figured out, that he could get his wants, he could have his cake and he could eat it too. His wants, I deserve it, I can handle it, I got it. And then it begins to all unfold. And before you know, two of the three commitments that he made, they've gone by the wayside. The only thing he's got left is the long hair that he's holding on to, which is kind of funny, is the outward thing. It's the thing that people see. So that's what he's holding on to, because as long as I've got the hair, then I can convince people that everything else is all right. But is it all right? Absolutely not. Two of those three commitments that he made to God have gone by the wayside, and we've only gone a chapter. But here's my question to you. Are you headed down the same path? Are you in the same boat when you make your decisions and you look out there and you look at the world and you see this shiny whatever it is out there that you want? Do you just look at it and say, I want that? Doesn't matter what it costs me. Doesn't matter what I have to do to get it. I want it. And then I move from I want it to you know what? I want it and you know I deserve to have it. Man, I work hard in my life. I get and do this. I always abide by the rules. I do all this. I can have this one thing. I deserve it. And then we look at God when God says, you're not supposed to be doing that. When the Holy Spirit works in our life and people come into our life and say, this isn't a good decision. We look at him and we say, just back off. This is my life. I can handle this. Do you head down the same path? I can tell you I've walked down this path a few times in my life. People told me not a good decision. I make the decision anyway. I do what I want to do, and it leads me pretty much where Samson ends up. Here's what I asked you. Are you willing to make the right decision? Are you willing to say, you know what? Maybe I want it, but what God has for me is better than what I want. Maybe I can convince myself I deserve it. But you know what? I deserve a lot more if I didn't have Christ in my life, because I know exactly what I deserve because of my sin. Can I handle it? No, I can't. I mean, maybe I think I can, but I can't. And if I began to make the decision as God sees things, I really could be deserving of wearing the hero shirt. All of the logos out there would actually apply to me. But when I choose to do it my way, I'm not another hero. I'm just a guy in a t-shirt with a logo. The question becomes, what decisions are you making?